This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 91, where we're going to catch up on all the latest Azure news, Office 365 news, and AWS news, recorded live August 13th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Good morning, AC.
Good morning, CJ.
Ooh, you're sounding a little better, buddy. How you doing?
All with the power of pharmaceuticals.
Oh, yeah. Drug to the eyeballs.
So, I mean, like last week, you heard my voice was kind of scratchy and stuff, but the week before, it was completely gone.
Scratchy? You sounded like you were dying under a truck.
This whole thing has turned into like a persistent cough. So, like, I've been through now. I'm on my second round of oral steroids. And then they gave me an inhaler to do right before I start talking a lot, which I just took my two puffs of. And then they also gave me a cough suppressant, but it's laced with codeine. So this podcast is being brought to you by a slightly amped up and slightly stoned AC.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm sure we'll get into some really deep conversation, buddy. Don't go get the munchies and run off halfway through.
Well, the funny thing is that my voice is actually back to normal, but it doesn't sound like it's totally back to normal because the codeine that's in the cough syrup has got me kind of like, it's got my voice box kind of like chilled out. So I'm a little, or my vocal cords kind of chilled out. So that's why I have a weird kind of a scratchy kind of a sound. But
nice.
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm pretty good. We've got a good lineup for the show today. We've got some news we want to get through. We've got some Azure stuff to talk about. We've got some Office 365 stuff and a little bit of AWS news at the end as well. And I've got some other news.
Yeah, we got some big news about you, but we're going to hold that one to the very end. Stay tuned.
Yep. Stay tuned.
Awesome.
You want to kick things off with some Azure news?
Yeah, man, let's just dive right into it. So we got some GA stuff. So today, or actually August the 12th, the Azure blog announced that the Azure Data Factory is now GA, is now generally available. So what is this? The way I like to think about it, this is basically SQL Server Analysis or Integration Services, or SSIS. This is the Azure version of SSIS. It's gone GA. And so we got a link to where we'll point to it in the show notes. A lot of great cool features for it, like a Visual Studio plugin for authoring and deployment. It's part of the latest Azure SDK for Visual Studio, improved monitoring and data lineage, network visualizations, integration with Azure machine learning and batch, enhanced cloud resource management capabilities, connectors for a bunch of common on-prem and cloud data stores, and globally deployed data movement as a service.
Nice. Yeah, and just taking a look at the site, and they sort of organize it by saying it's all about ingesting data and preparing it, then transforming it, then publishing it for people to consume in places where they're going to find it, obviously, and then monitoring and managing all of those scheduled or data transformation processes and things, which is kind of nice because we got all these different sources of data, and you want to get it into the form and the place that you want to consume it from. And so this can help you with that.
Yep, definitely. So that's good stuff. What else we got?
Sweet. I think, oh gosh, there's three other news items we got. I think the next one is some new CDN features from Azure, all around like country filtering and various new analytics and so forth. So there's a blog post we'll link to in the show notes called New CDN Features, Country Filtering, Compression, and Analytics by a program manager from Azure Media Services.
I'm about to say, man, you missed the biggest one of all three of the features that they added, which is compression.
Compression, yes.
Yeah, it can do compression for, go through and do like dynamic and static compressions, but it's all done on the CDN side. We don't have to worry about it. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty nice. I think country filtering is kind of interesting too, because most CDNs, you throw something up and then you can, well, at least my rudimentary understanding of a CDN, right, is you throw it up and they help you distribute it around the world and get it to nodes that are going to be speedily accessible from all around the globe, from all sorts of different countries. And in this case, they're saying you can now add country filtering, but you may want to restrict access by using this filtering to your content by country. So you could say, hey, I'm just going to cut out China from my data or access to my data on the CDN, or New Zealand, because right, we all we all know we don't want to like let the Kiwis in on things. So you might want to just chop out a particular geo or country or set of countries from getting access. Lots of interesting uses for that, I think. But yeah, compression, that sounds pretty sweet. So automatically reducing the size of your files and getting your websites nice and quick, I guess.
Oh, that's cool.
And then finally, there's some better analytics. I guess, you know, this is all about insight into what's going on, bandwidth, number of hits going on to your content. They've got some WYSI graphs and reports and things like that that you can take a look at and see what's going on in your CDN a bit better.
Yeah, man. Good stuff. Another thing that they got is importing is another blog post from July the 15th. This one's a little bit older that we kind of missed, but it's by the program manager for Azure Document DB, Stephen Barron. And what this is that it's a migration tool, a data migration tool for Azure Document DB. It's a product that or a tool that the team has shipped. It is a open source tool, so you can grab it and explore it however you want to see it. It allows you to very easily look at Azure blobs and import them into Document DB. It also is going to allow you to import data from an Amazon DynamoDB, and then it also allows you to do some stuff with DocumentDB indexing policies. And so these different additions and everything, all these different pieces here just makes a little open source tool to make your life easier in working with DocumentDB. I haven't done anything with DocumentDB. I'm about to. I'm actually, the NFL season is coming up on us in the US, and I am, I play fantasy football, and I've got a keep my entire cheat sheet for when I go into the draft. I keep it in a Excel spreadsheet. And what I do is I have like different worksheets for like how I have players rated. I have a different worksheet for the entire roster depth chart. So I can see if like the number one, number two, number three receivers are still available in my league. But I have like three or four different worksheets that I work with. And what I've done in the past is I've written a macro to where when I select a player, I can hit a key combination and have that macro actually write that, go through the entire workbook and change the background color of that cell wherever that player is listed to black so that I know he's been drafted so I don't try and pick him up later in the draft. Huh. What I'm doing this time, though, because it's just macros don't work in the web version of Excel. They only work in one place, basically. They only work in the Windows version of Excel. So I'm actually going to use my Office add-in skills and write a add-in to help me draft it and not only go through and draft it, but put in the value for the auction price that someone paid for it. It'll write those to a Document DB, and then there'll be a little website that everybody else in our league can look at because we need to see what everybody's budget is and what everybody's roster looks like.
Wow.
And so I'm putting that together, and it's all a Node.js website, and it's gonna store all the data in Document DB because it's easy.
Yeah, no joke. And are there not tools to manage leagues like this already, or teams, I should say?
There are things that you can go out and buy and stuff like that, but there's different services. Everyone's got their favorite stuff. Nobody in my league is a listener of this podcast, I'm sure of it. So like what I do is I subscribe to a service called The Huddle, and they have a bunch of tables and stuff that you can go grab. So I just copy those, put them in Excel, format some stuff differently, and then change the values on some of the players and put them in. A lot of people will go use you want to use your own system because like we host our leagues with CBS and CBS has their way of rating players. But when you're looking at how everybody else is rating them, you can kind of get conflicts and
I see.
You're all going the same stuff. You all have the same values. And so there are some things that are out there, but I've just got my style of doing it and ta-da.
Nice. Yeah, that'd be cool. You have to report back on your usage of Document DB and let us know how it all goes. Because like you, I haven't had a chance to use it in war, so to speak, yet. So
I've played with it a little bit. You know, the thing I like about it a lot compared to using it with using something like SQL. Mm. Nothing against SQL. It's just this NoSQL versus SQL kind of model.
Yeah, yeah.
I like how when you want to make an update to your application, and if you have a change to the schema, you don't have to worry about some sort of a migration that you go with SQL. Whereas with DocumentDB, it's really just code. I just throw a JSON object at DocumentDB and say, hey, save this thing. And if I change the schema, I change the schema, and I need to query it or get data back out different fields, I change the code, but the code's expecting those fields to be there.
Yeah.
Because I'm saving the data that way.
Yeah, but it's when the bit that gets me, and maybe we should dive into this in another episode, right, is that it seems like you're just shifting the work from tweaking around with your database schema in a SQL scenario, right, and then having to deal with like column migrations or additions or schema changes, to having to be really defensive in code instead, because you could be throwing JSON objects at your document DB in this case, right? That don't contain fields that you then later add. And so then you've got objects, some with those fields, some without those fields. And surely you just have to be defensive, more defensive in your programming, which I guess is not a bad thing in general anyway.
Think about it like this. I thought the same thing, but think about it like this. It's no different than if SQL, if I do a query and I get a field back and there's nothing in that field, so it's a null value. If I do a query against DocumentDB and I get in the field doesn't have any data in it because it never existed when I first requested it. Like I request basically a non-existent field, I get null back. So I'm writing the code anyway on either side because I'm checking for null values. It's really good for like CRUD-based stuff. But if you're going to do any kind of like relational or analytics kind of stuff, I want to do like an ETL from that and put it inside of, extract, transform, and load into a relational system like SQL to be able to do more analytics with the data and more reporting.
Like for doing joins and queries across different types of objects and stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, for more like reporting and stuff like that. But for like simple, like most of the stuff we do is just like, I need a few tables and throw them together. I think it's really useful.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I've got another one, which is really cool. Using app service, web apps, continuous deployment with GitHub organizations.
Mm.
This is pretty kick-ass. Mm. So this is the ability to do continuous deployment in Azure websites from GitHub.
Mm.
So you basically go in and grant, effectively what you're doing is you're setting up a bunch of webhooks in GitHub and granting it access and that sort of thing. And then whenever things happen in your GitHub repo, it's sending events to Azure and Azure's triggering and grabbing stuff and going and doing deployments for you, which if you ask me is totally kick-ass.
So the big piece with this one is that we've been able to do this, but the big piece with this announcement is that now you can authenticate an entire organization. And so you have to do it with each individual repo. And what's cool is that Azure already has the code that when you hook this into a GitHub repo, they already have the code that goes and registers with the GitHub webhooks. So you don't have to set anything up on GitHub.
Yep.
I freaking love this. And so I'm trying to figure, one of these days we'll do an episode on this, but I'm trying to figure out like the style that I like doing this, where I'm actually going to do this with the add-in that I'm doing for Excel, is that the style I'm using today is like all my sources is in like a / SRC folder inside my repo. And then in a separate branch, I have another folder called / DST. And that's for my distributions. And inside that, I've got three different distributions. I have a production, I have a debug, and I have a test. And the production one is like all the minified and combined files. A debug one is all the loose files. And the test has got a bunch of my unit test stuff for JavaScript stuff. And what I do is I set up three different deployment slots on my Azure web app.
Mm.
And whenever I get a push into that one release branch, it takes all the code from those three different folders and it pushes them into my those different slots. So I can test it in the debug and test it in the test and make sure the production one looks good. And when I think the production one looks good, I swap it with the live deployment slot on that web app so that it's that the manual deployment of a live website, that's always, I want it manual. I don't want to automate that. But the deployment of getting the website up into Azure to where I can look at it first before I switch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I fight with, keep that in the same repo, keep it in a separate branch, put it in a different repo. I don't know, but I'm trying to figure out my style that I like the most of that. And then I'll push it out there. But holy crap, just the continuous deployment side of this is just, it's glorious.
Yeah, it's nice being able to wire this stuff up pretty straightforwardly as opposed to needing a whole bunch of separate tools or scripts or, you know, all of that stuff to hokey it together, so to speak. It's nice to see some kick-ass integration.
Yeah, this one was pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I like it. I like it a lot. There's a cool video linked to off from that link as well by Corey Fowler and Byron Tardiff who go show you this stuff in action. So check out the video for sure.
Definitely cool stuff there. And you devs, you got to check that. If you haven't played with this in the past, you definitely want to check this out. I mean, this is one of the biggest appeals for me to using Azure for my deployment. Azure websites to host my applications, Azure and GitHub together. I love how easy it is.
Yeah.
All right, now we got another bit of news here from Azure. This one came out on August the 12th, the day we're recording on August the 13th. So this is yesterday. This one, I love this. This is awesome. So this is from the Azure AD team. So the title is now in public preview, the converged Microsoft account in Azure Active Directory programming model. Now, what's this is cool and there's some information about it, but this post is actually a bit misleading because the body of the post is, there's a bit of an intro here where Microsoft is working, they're publicly saying they're working on converging using Microsoft accounts and Azure AD org IDs or work in school accounts, whatever we call them,
yep.
So that there's a single login flow that we can use. The post goes through and explains kind of how this works. And it's not fully baked today. It's still going through some stuff that they're working on today. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done. But the idea is that you won't have this, just like you go to some sites and it says login with Google or login with Facebook, you now would use this login with Microsoft. They're not going to say Azure AD because no one knows what those things are in the as far as users and consumers. They know what Microsoft is.
Yeah.
They don't know that when you're actually logging with Facebook, it's actually Facebook Connect. So,
well, yeah, and users don't know when they're logging into Office 365 that it's a Azure AD account, right? They just log in with their work account.
Right, right. So this blog post goes through and shows you how if you pick Microsoft and you go to put your login in, it figures out, is that login that you use, that username, is that an MSA, a Microsoft account, which we used to call live IDs, or is it an org ID? And whichever one it is, it takes you to that login process. And right now it may involve a redirect, but they're going to clean that up. If you have the same username in both systems, like I do, my email is actually the same in both, they give you the option to choose which one do you want to use. Now, it was cool. And then it goes and prompts in common consent. What do you want to give it access to and all that stuff? But here's the part that I thought was cool about this is the demo or the first, I don't know if it's the first public time they've said it, but it's the first time I think that I can remember that we're seeing something called App Model V2.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I haven't seen that either. At least publicly.
Yeah. So for those of you who have been doing Office 365 API stuff, you've heard us talk about it a little bit on the podcast, but we know about this thing called the app model, or it's not really the app model. Don't think SharePoint or SharePoint app model or add-in model. It's not that. This is applications within Azure AD. And so when you've gone to log into the past with a Azure AD application, you know you've gone to the endpoints that have been like the authorized or the token endpoint, and you've gone to a V1. Well, now there's a V2. So what is this? So what this is this is going to support the new converged model. And it also is introducing a brand new app registration portal. So if you go to apps.dev.microsoft.com, you can go in and you can create, you can log in using your MSA or your org ID. You can create a new application, define the secret, you get the ID and all that stuff. But here's some of the cool stuff that's new about this that I think is gonna be really exciting for developers. Today, when you go in and create a new Azure AD app, you have to choose, is this a website or web API? That's one option. Or is it a native app like mobile or Windows or a universal app for Windows or something like that? Now you only create one application and these two different, let's call them modes, they can both be living in the same app and use the same key. So we don't have to have two separate app registrations.
Well, there's a couple of things that I'd like to talk about on this, right?
Yeah.
First, registering an app. This new portal for registering apps is so much easier than doing it through the Azure portal today, right? Where there's all these fields that you don't quite know how to fill out and all that sort of stuff. And this new portal makes it quite a lot easier. And then the second point you hit on about the whole web and mobile thing all in the same app registration, this used to be really tricky, right? Because there used to be only one redirect URI at the end of your... So, and what that means is at the end of your authentication process, where does Azure AD send you back to once you've authenticated, in other words, back to the application that you came from, is called this redirect URI. Mm. And if you're building a mobile app, you want that to be different. Or what is that even, right? There's no web page. Mm. But in a web platform, you typically want to go back to an HTTP address, right? Back to your own web app. And so people either fudged this a number of different ways, or they'd have two different app registrations, and then you've got two different IDs and secrets, and then you've got two different authentications, and you've also got two different grants, right? So you're asking the user to grant access to your application twice, one for the web and one for your mobile access. And it just was messy, right? And then did you tie the users together in your own back end, or did you sort of somehow merge those two? So this just really makes this a whole lot easier to manage as an app developer. And it should be a ton easier to learn. Things like, there was another good one, in the Azure AD portal, there's some settings you can do in the portal, and then some settings you've got to download the app manifest, open the file up, tweak them around and change them, and then upload it back again. And that is the most undiscoverable and painful process for a new developer.
That's if you want to do the implicit flow for like a spy application.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of hard through the Azure AD portal, and this makes it a bunch easier.
Now, there are two other pieces of this that I thought were really, really cool. And I'm really looking forward to learning more about when Office 365 and all the API endpoints around Office 365 are going to support all these. Now, here's the two things I thought were really cool. The blog post that we're going to reference in the show notes, you guys go take a look at it. They've got samples of what the request for authorization and what the request for the token, what those look like. But here's the cool thing about these new endpoints. Previously, or I shouldn't say previously, really today, in the V1 app model for Azure, you know, at the bottom, when you scroll all the way bottom to the bottom of an application, you have to choose the different applications and the different scopes, or we commonly call those permissions.
Yes.
That the app has access to.
Yeah.
Well, in the past, you had to define all that stuff when you registered the app or when you went in and make changes to it, so that when someone went to go use your app, they had to grant consent the first time they used the app.
Yeah.
Here's the cool thing with this new model. You don't define them at registration time. You define them at runtime using a scope parameter. So I pass in something like, say, if I want to go through and work with calendars in Outlook, I want to say, give me the calendars.read scope. And if the user has not already okayed that permission, Azure AD or the new app model V2, the common consent dialog will pop up and say, do you give it this access to do this as well?
Yeah.
That's really slick.
It's really slick because you can have this really complicated application that needs lots of different scopes, but only if they, you only have to ask for it if they go into that part of your application. So for example, like onboarding a new user, you could just ask them for just, you know, access to their profile, right? So that you've got their email address and their name and that sort of thing without having to ask for like a million different scopes for all of your app. And then as they maybe sign up for a certain tier of your application, or you know, that maybe they're on the basic SKU versus the advanced SKU or pro SKU or whatever, you could then ask for additional scopes on the fly if they upgrade or what have you, and you don't have to freak people out with like some massive long list of like, I want to look at everything in your inbox and your calendar and your contacts and your files necessarily right from day one.
I heard a great analogy for this, and I'm gonna really take a risk here of really getting in trouble. So this is always going to be fun. So let's give this a shot. I'll keep it as clean as I can, but here's a great analogy for how the app model works. And now this actually is a good one now that we have this new V2 model. The V2 model that we have today is the equivalent of asking somebody out on a date and just saying, I'd like your phone number, right? And then from there, anything can happen, but you say, I just want your phone number. Whereas today, the app model today is much more like, hey, I'd like to get your phone number, your address, and I'd like to, can I get to first, second, third base and hit a home run?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Right? That's what we're doing today. I mean, it's really like, I kept it really clean. I used the baseball analogy, okay?
You did actually. You did really well there.
Yeah, I could tell you could know where I was going with this.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really, I mean, the current model that we have, the V1 for the app model, wants everything from the get-go, right? And you think about it, when you go and ask somebody that information, they're kind of like, just am cool giving you my phone number. I'd kind of like to use your app and find out a little bit more about it before we actually go to first base, to second base, to third base. And now this way, you can establish trust with your customer and app user before you go to these different levels here. So that's pretty cool. The other thing that's neat about this, I'm going to get off that analogy really quick. The other thing that's cool about this is that because the scope or the permission that you're requesting, because it looks like a URL. So like, let's say I'm going for calendars.read, the scope would be scope equals https://outlook.office.com/calendars.read. Mm-hmm. I don't need to specify the resource IDs anymore for these different endpoints because they're included in the scopes. And so I no longer need the resource IDs.
Nice.
So it's really giving us, I think as a developer, it's really making it a better experience for me as a developer to provide a better experience for my users. And it's making it easier for me to register the apps and to communicate with Azure AD for authentication. I was really pumped about this when I read this post.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's streamlining, you know, much like we did with the Office 365 APIs and a whole bunch of different endpoints and a whole different bunch of places. And then we've moved to the unified API where it's going to be, you know, through one one location. And then this really simplifies it on the Azure AD side about, you know, registering for apps and asking for things. And I think the two together are going to work really nicely.
Yeah, it's really cool. Now, here's the cool thing about it. You can go play with this today. You know why you can play with it today?
Why is that?
Because this is our next announcement for Office 365. The unified Outlook APIs for Office 365 and Outlook.com are now here. I will link, we'll link to that to the Exchange Dev blog post. But this is the one API, the one endpoint that supports this new V2 common consent app model.
Yes.
So you can go check this stuff out today using the Exchange related APIs in Office 365.
Yep. Go start playing around.
Yeah.
It's nice, huh? So yeah, the this is sort of the Outlook announcements part of a bunch of improvements in the Outlook space that we're making. One around is in the new APIs, obviously, and improvement there. But then also talking about bringing the Outlook add-in model to Outlook.com as well. So along with consumer access to one API for Outlook, as you know, with commercial access to the same API for Outlook, you can have the same authentication scheme. And now you'll also be able to build the same add-ins and have them run in Outlook in Office 365 and Outlook in Outlook.com as well. So it's all nicely streamlining across, you know, from the end user experience through the auth experience to the API experience.
It's very cool. I mean, and this is not only just going through the updates and improvements that have gone on with Outlook. I know the UI and the Outlook web app has gotten refreshed. It looks, I like the new UI, very subtle toolbar and stuff, but you guys have also had a couple really popular add-ins land in the store recently.
Yeah, so you can go to store.office.com today. I've already added these to my Outlook.
Me too.
At work, which is pretty sweet. I demoed Uber at Build Conference. And so the Uber app, they've got a ride reminder application. So when you're setting up a calendar appointment, you can set an Uber reminder. And then on your phone, this is the most kick-ass experience I've seen. It's so seamless. It's really nice. You set a ride reminder in your calendar appointment in Outlook, and it communicates with Uber and sets a ride reminder in Uber. And then on your phone, you just get a notification from Uber, which says, "Hey, it's time to leave for your meeting or what have you. Slide to ride." And you literally swipe the ride reminder. If you're on an iOS device, I don't know what it's like on an Android device, but you swipe it. It fires up the Uber app. It's already got your destination preloaded from your calendar appointment in Outlook. And obviously it picks up where you are, and then it's like one tap, boom, you've got an Uber on the way, and you're good to go.
That is awesome.
Isn't it cool?
That is so awesome. I can't wait to use that.
That one I think is like super useful, at least for me. PayPal is another one. So there's a PayPal, you know, for sending payments to people and so forth from Outlook.
Yeah.
There's a new PayPal add-in. There's an Evernote add-in for being able to send stuff to people in your email from Evernote.
Yeah, that one doesn't work as well. That one I was a little disappointed in, because that one, you can save an email straight to Evernote. But in my experience, it's only saving the title of the email, of the subject of the email, as the title, as the Evernote note. You can pick the tags and the notebook it goes into, but it doesn't save the body of the email. I want the body of the email to go in there.
Yeah, that seems a little strange.
Yeah, it's a little disappointing.
I'm not sure about that one. I haven't tried that one. Boomerang is the other really cool one that I think is just
badass.
Totally cool. Right. So Boomerang, you can basically send there's a bunch of options, but you can send somebody an email and then have Boomerang remind you in, say, a couple of days or, you know, a few hours or what have you, if there's no reply to your email, which is awesome, because I send people emails and then I've got to make a note to follow up if I haven't heard from them. You can make it send your emails later. You could drop suggested meeting times in the calendar from your calendar and things like that. It's totally helpful.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's very cool.
And then there's more too. There's IFT and Yelp and Wunderlist stuff coming soon as well to Outlook.com.
Oh, I didn't realize that IFT was going to have an app. That's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome. Hey, there's one of the link that I wanted to point to before we dive in, we kind of transition off news stuff, is with Amazon Web Services, the guys over at Pluralsight, they've got a really good blog post about navigating the different AWS certifications that are out there. So we're just going to put a link to that. So if you're looking for different AWS certifications for Amazon Web Services, check out the Pluralsight blog.
Yeah, nice.
There you go. There you go.
Love me some training.
So you got some news to share, don't you?
I do. I do. This has been a little while in the making, but finally I can talk about it. I am leaving Microsoft at the end of August.
Ha, huh, no kidding. Actually, I knew this. What am I saying? I'm acting surprised.
Yeah, yeah.
You kind of went public with it yesterday on your blog, so.
I did, yeah. So it's been a very tough decision for me, but I've decided to move on from Microsoft and my spot on the Office 365 team and go. I'm co-founding a new startup that's going to be building products around the Microsoft Cloud and Office 365 and things like that. And all I will say is stay tuned for information on specific details and product things that we're going to be building. I don't want to dive into that now. But I'm co-founding with a good friend of mine, Brian Cook, who was one of the co-founders of Nintex, which is a rather large SharePoint ISV many years ago, or still is, I should say. And so we're going to be setting up shop in Kirkland, down on the waterfront there on Lake Washington, and building a new little startup.
Man, that's awesome. Congratulations. That's going to be that's a terrifying, exciting, but...
I described it to somebody on Twitter, like, I feel like I'm going to be riding around on fire on a unicycle for a while.
There you go. That's I mean, you're doing the startup world, and or the entrepreneur kind of world, and I tell you, it is fun. It is taxing, but it is very rewarding, and I'm happy for you. Very happy for you. I'm very excited to see where this leads. And hey, overall, change is good, man. I think change is good, and it's good to get you the hell out of Microsoft so we can get somebody actually get some work done in there. I'm just kidding.
It's time for some fresh blood, you think?
There we go.
I mean, I want to make sure that, like, I am not leaving because I don't like Microsoft. I love Microsoft and I love Office 365. And I've had a blast working on it for the last 18 months. Or so, year and a half since I've been back at Microsoft. And to be honest, it was a very tough call for me, but it all boiled down to effectively not wanting to die with any regrets. And I felt like this was an opportunity I didn't want to miss. So as much as I'm devastated to leave my team and to leave Microsoft, you know, I know that I want to give this a great go. So, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's an awesome opportunity, and it's definitely a hard decision to make. But from what I know, man, it's an awesome opportunity. I wish you know nothing but the best and awesome stuff. So, what's it called?
Hyperfish.
Hyperfish. I see hyperfish.com. Is that's the logo?
That is a piece of clip art that we found.
Just to make sure that the domain doesn't go to a 404, huh?
Correct. Yeah. So stay tuned on branding.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, it's going to be really, really fun. I'm totally terrified and excited all at the same time. And I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into it. But, you know, it's like I will still be very close, near and dear to my heart with Microsoft and Office 365 and Azure and all the things that I've been working on and doing. So I'll be looking at it with a far more critical eye than most, given my background in it. And my team are on fire. They're doing all the right things and they've got a great year ahead of them. So I'm not worried about that at all.
Yeah. Well, congratulations, and it'll be exciting, man. It's gonna be fun to watch.
It's gonna be crazy.
Welcome to my side.
Yeah, totally. I could sympathize with you a whole bunch more.
There you go. Cool, man. Well, hey, now that we've done that, you want to dive into picks?
Oh, yeah, we've got picks. That's right. I totally forgot about that.
I take it that the Hyperfish site is one of your picks.
No, that wasn't one of my picks. It's going to be a little more interesting than that.
You want to go first?
So Chris Hadfield, Commander Hadfield, is a Canadian astronaut that I think I've probably spoken about on the show before, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's famous for doing David Bowie's Space Oddity recorded live, like recorded from the space station, right? When he was commander of the International Space Station, which to me is just like, what? Anyway, so he's coming out with an album called Space Sessions, Songs from a Tin Can. And this is an album of songs he recorded on ISS, one of which I'm imagining is Space Oddity. Anyway, so you think, what? That's pretty cool. Probably the first album from space ever recorded, right? I imagine. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I've never heard of this before, but
that's pretty cool. So then David Bowie himself sent out on Twitter and on Facebook a note about this new album coming from Chris Hadfield, right? And he quotes I'm just the space cadet. He's the commander.
That's awesome.
And then goes on to talk about this album and Space Sessions, songs from a tin can. So that's pretty sweet, right? David Bowie talking about your album? What? It's like, he's kind of crazy important and huge. So I will be getting that album for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just started reading Chris Hadfield's book. I just started halfway through it. That man's amazing.
Yeah, the guy's a total legend. He's such a beast. Anyway, so that's one of my picks. I've got a really small second pick. So I don't know if you know about these things called peel cases, which are super thin iPhone cases. They're pretty sweet. But so what they've come out with, that same peel, buypeel.com, they've got this bag for $30. They've got this bag of, they call it the juice bag, of three iPhone chargers. And so they'll give you this for $30. You could buy these three little mini iPhone chargers. But what's even cooler is they come with 3 6-foot lightning cables, which you're like, what the hell are you going on about, Chris? Like, this is not exciting. But for any tech geek who travels, having a six foot lightning cable is pretty important, right? Because you're at a hotel or whatever, you plug in. Usually hotel plugs are in the most inopportune places.
Yeah.
Like in the most, you're either unplugging the alarm clock or you're unplugging the bedside lamp to get a cable plugged in. And then, you know, it's miles from the bed or what have you, and things stretch. Anyway, so I don't know about you, but I think 6 foot lightning cables are just like heavenly. And so you can, for $30, you can get three of them and three sort of mini connect wall plugs to plug in. And so I've got one plugged in by my bed. So in case I want to use my phone, you know, read the news or whatever, I've got a nice long cable to get into bed and not have to be, you know, sort of hunched over the side of the bed and with my short lightning cable if I'm running out of juice.
The lightning cable, that's actually a really good deal because the lightning cables from Apple, I think, are like $20.
Yeah. So I bought these. They are, let's just say, they're not exactly the best quality in the universe.
Okay.
So I don't know how long they're going to last, but they work. But they're just a little unpolished, if you know what I mean. The plastic's not quite as what you'd expect from Apple, for example, things like that. But in general, like, oh my God, 6 foot cable, hook me up. Anyway, that's my pick.
That's pretty cool, man. That's I picked up a cable. I got a cable from, where was I? I spoke at a conference and one of the speaker gifts was a lightning cable, but the tip of the lightning cable, where it's a lightning connector, it pops up and it's a micro USB.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So for those of you on the call, those of you listening in, sorry, you can't see this, but I should show this to CJ. So there's the tip right there.
Yeah.
And you go,
yoink. Oh, that's sweet.
And there's a micro USB. So it's like a dual purpose charger.
Yeah. I have a little from Apple. You can get the little micro USB to lightning adapters. They've got they're a little sort of plug you stick on the end of the other cable.
Cool. Hey, good picks.
Yeah. How about you?
I have two also quick ones. One is, I've talked about it in the past, but Visual Studio Code, they had a cool thing that was a cool update that shipped yesterday on August the 12th. It's version 0.7. And the thing that's cool about it for me is how they deal with Markdown.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Go check out what they've done. Go to the site, click on Docs, go to Languages, then click on Markdown and read that page. I'm changing my workflow right now. I'm having a bit of a challenge right now with it in the sense that I'm trying to get it to both generate an HTML file from my Markdown file, but I also want to do the preview mode, but I want the preview mode to render using the CSS from GitHub. And I can't get it to use that CSS. Instead, it keeps using the CSS from that's used by VS Code. And I got a thread. I mean, they show you how to do it on the document. I couldn't get it to work. They are trying. I got a thread going with a guy on Stack Overflow who's trying to figure out what I'm doing wrong. It's pretty darn cool.
Nice. Yeah, I love. Yeah, I'm using that tool more and more.
Yeah, it's fabulous. The other one that I have is the other pick that I have is a thing called Tron Club. So that's just tronclub.com. What this is, and it's not exactly on the cheap side. It's a little bit more on the pricey side. But what this is that for a monthly fee, or you can pay up front for a 1-year subscription. What they will do is they will send you, it's about the size, it's about a centimeter thick, and it's about the size of a Netflix DVD mailer. But what they send you is this cool little book of different circuit projects of stuff that you can do, right?
Ah, nice.
And then they send you all the parts you need to go through and to do a little breadboard and a battery and all the little stuff you need for like resistors and all that stuff. So if you like playing with like, you know, if you've got that Raspberry Pi from the Ignite conference and you don't know what to do with it and all the stuff you can do and all that stuff, this is a pretty cool little way though to kind of figure out, you know, how this, how you can get, hook up different things together, different circuits, micro circuits, microcontrollers and circuits together. And
yeah,
I got it to sit down and do this with my kids because they think this stuff's interesting. It also is kind of educational for me. And I'm also going to try to do this with my kids' classroom, the fifth grade class, to go in there like once a month. So I get a different pack every month. It's got about 20 projects in each one of the packs. They can take anywhere from, you know, 10 seconds to about a minute and a half to do each project. So it's a fun, cool little thing.
Yeah, I love the idea of giving me ideas, right? Because people are like, what do I do with this Raspberry Pi thing? Like, I'm not sure what I do next. And it'd be kind of cool to have a few projects to get started.
Yeah. And there's nothing in here about really doing projects. I mean, like, it just says like, here's how to play with a semiconductor with a transistor. Here's an infrared receiver with a transistor. Here's a timer with an infrared light. Here's how to work with NOR switch buttons. Here's how to work with a NOR logic gate. I mean, it's just, and it's cool because it has the breadboard. It shows you how you're supposed to wire everything together. And then it shows you a schematic and then a little bit of an explanation on at the bottom of each one of the books. So they've done a really good job with it. It's really, you can tell it's on a shoestring budget, but it's like $15 a month and it's a cool little thing to do.
Yeah, nice. That sounds like real fun.
Yeah, man.
Hey, so great show.
Yeah, that's fun stuff, man.
Lots of news, lots of good picks, a couple of job changes, that sort of thing.
One job change.
Well, I was counting leaving and starting.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you got two of them.
I could be doing nothing.
Hey, when is that effective? When do you leave Microsoft?
Last day is still TBD, but probably sometime in the first week of September.
Okay, so you'll be by the end of September, you'll be full-time Hyperfish.
Oh, yeah, I would say by the end of the first week of September, I'll be going fishing.
Awesome, man. Well, looking forward to it.
Yeah, will do. People should watch the blog for news and announcements and updates on that. My loosely typed.net is my blog.
There you go. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good times.
Thanks, AC.
Yeah, man. Talk to you soon, CJ.
Catch you later.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.